Hello and welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. I'm your host, Abigail Galvan.
Sports and the Supreme Court. The justices hear oral argument in a major case involving biological men participating in women's athletics. Fighting for the unborn. Pope Leo delivers strong comments at the Vatican, defending life at all stages. We have analysis from Dr. Matthew Bunsen. And baby talk. Why the Holy Father hosted several families and their children at the Sistine Chapel.
Should states be allowed to keep biological males out of women's sports? That question was before the Supreme Court this week as justices heard oral arguments in two cases, Little v. Keacox and West Virginia v. BPJ. The cases challenged laws in Idaho and West Virginia that require athletes to compete on sports teams based on biological sex alone, keeping males out of female sports. Opponents wish to carve out exceptions for trans-identifying students who do not have a competitive advantage. They argue the laws violate Title IX and the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. The states counter that Title IX allows separating sports by sex and that biological sex, not gender identity, is the relevant deciding factor. They say the laws apply to all male and female athletes and are designed to ensure girls can compete in school sports in a safe and fair manner. A decision is expected in late June or early July. One legal expert says the court appeared sympathetic to the state's arguments.
These cases are tremendously important, but I'll tell you, Justice Alito honed right in on the core issue. What does sex mean? And is it permissible for the law to take note of differences between males and females and, for example, in sports, to permit female-only sports? And I think we can see that the way the arguments went, I think it's going to come down in the right way. I think we can be fairly confident that the court is not going to say that it is a violation of equal protection for laws to say that female-only sports must be restricted to females, that males cannot participate. I think they're going to say the same with Title IX, that Title IX does permit schools to have female-only sports.
This comes amid a report in Politico last month. The Trump administration quietly restored tens of millions of dollars in Title X family planning funds to Planned Parenthood. The news comes just days after the ACLU dropped a lawsuit against the Trump administration over those funds. We will continue to follow this developing story. Here in the United States, the debate rages on Capitol Hill over taxpayer funding for abortion. Republicans say they will release a plan soon regarding the Hyde Amendment, the provision that bans federal funding from most abortions. Pro-lifers say they will not accept any taxpayer money going toward abortion.
Limits on taxpayer funding of abortion are just non-negotiable. There's a big, big body of research that shows that once taxpayer dollars start to pay for abortion, abortion numbers go up. Even pro-abortion groups agree with this. So, I mean, now's the time to, take a hard line. Limits on taxpayer funding for abortion, are popular. There is strong public support for this. The March for Life is coming up. I think we should, use the attention that pro-life issues are getting, use that leverage to really kind of convince President Trump and Republicans in the House and Senate to, again, take a hard line and really protect taxpayers, protect preborn children, and stop taxpayer funding for abortion.
With the midterm elections coming up in November, the Charlotte Lozier Institute's Michael New thinks pro-life policy is not top of mind for the president.
President Trump views a lot of pro-life policy goals as political losers. I think he's very focused on the midterm elections in 2026. I think he's concerned that if Republicans move too quickly on certain policies, it may hurt the electoral chances of Republicans. And I think he's controlled that. If he's concerned the Republicans do lose control of the House or the Senate, frankly, he may get impeached again. I don't think he wants that to happen. So I think he's being very political, which is too bad. I think that, Republicans do have power. We should use it to have good policies. They should use that power to really promote policies that strengthen and build a culture of life. I'm not convinced at all it's a political loser. I don't think there's been any statewide Republican elected official who's actually lost their election campaign. Since the Dobbs decision, I think we have good arguments to be made. We can fund pro-life candidates well.
In his first major address to Vatican diplomats last week, Pope Leo XIV defended life at all stages. He especially demanded an end to abortion and surrogacy. The Holy Father says the Catholic Church categorically rejects any practice that denies or exploits the origins of life and its development, in particular, abortion.
In this regard, the Holy See expresses deep concern about projects aimed at financing cross-border mobility for the purpose of accessing the so-called right to safe abortion. It also considers it deplorable that public resources are allocated to suppress life rather than being invested to support mothers and families. The primary objective must remain the protection of every unborn child and the effective and concrete support of every woman so that she is able to welcome life.
Pope Leo also denounced the practice of surrogacy, saying it transformed gestation into a, quote, negotiable service.
This violates the dignity both of the child, who is reduced to a product, and of the mother, exploiting her body and the generative process and distorting the original relational calling of the family.
Another life issue the Holy Father addressed is caring for the elderly and sick. Pope Leo says the elderly and those battling illness are often isolated and can struggle to find a reason to continue living. This is an opportunity for us to guide our vulnerable communities to life-affirming resources.
Civil society and states also have a responsibility to respond concretely to situations of vulnerability, offering solutions to human suffering, such as palliative care, and promoting policies of authentic solidarity rather than encouraging deceptive forms of compassion, such as euthanasia. A society is healthy and truly progresses only when it safeguards the sanctity of human life and works actively to promote it.
For more, we turn to our very own Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News, who joins us from Rome. Matthew, thank you so much for being with us. Okay.
Great to be with you.
Great. To start, what stood out the most to you about the Holy Father's address to diplomats?
Well, I think obviously every pope will be meeting with the diplomats. It's one of the great functions at the start of the year, bringing all the diplomats to the Holy See. Pope Leo is especially striking because two things. First, he demonstrated once again he is a true son of Augustine. He framed so much of the presentation, sort of Augustinian themes. He referenced, for example, Augustine's great work on the city of God, contrasting it with the city of man. But he framed it using those Augustinian themes by looking at the idea of the human person, defending life from, as you noted earlier, from conception to natural death in all stages of life. But he nested that defense within the rights and dignity of the human person, made in the image and likeness of God, and then noted the importance of life and its defense, nesting that within the life of the family, which, as he described it, as the guardian of life. So we see classic Augustinian theology with Pope Leo. We see classic Catholic social teaching with Pope Leo. And then we also see sort of classic Christian or Catholic anthropology with Pope Leo. This was beautifully composed, and I think it's something that we're going to want to revisit again, certainly over this next year, until he talks to the diplomats again next year.
Matthew, is it unusual for a pope to spend so much time of his address to diplomats on life issues?
Well, all the popes, certainly the modern era, have addressed their concerns on the life issues. Pope Francis, for example, in one of the last major addresses of his pontificate in January of last year, talked about abortion to the diplomats who had gathered from around the world. So this is not necessarily anything new. What I think Pope Leo is very successful in this time around, though, was how he looks at the totality of life. This was a rather poignant pro-life message, again, from life in every stage. And I think this is something that the diplomats need to hear, and I think something that Pope Leo considered to be very important to impart.
Now, tell us more about the audience Pope Leo was addressing. Were there some people in that room who represent countries with a less than robust record on life?
Yes, in a short answer to that is very much so. There are countries that have diplomatic relations with the Holy See that everyone is fully aware of the fact that they have policies that are quite contrary to what the Church's vision and teachings are for life. That's particularly the case with many of the Western countries, North America included. So Pope Leo recognizes that this is a very diverse audience, but he also recognizes, as all popes do, that this is a universal message. Yes, it's going to diplomats who represent Western countries, but diplomats also represent Asia, Africa, the Central and South America, who have their own problems and challenges. And in this address, he touched on many of those issues. One other aspect that I think is worth noting is that there's a certain bluntness to the language. We saw that at times, of course, with Pope Francis. But one thing that Pope Leo did, he gave us a bit of a little bit of a tip when he first met with the diplomats back in May of last year, in his first major gathering with the diplomats, in which he said something that I think a lot of people didn't quite note at the time, but now we're seeing why he said it. He said to the diplomats that it is often that the task of the Church to speak bluntly, but to speak the truth bluntly, but with charity. With that warning, they should have anticipated that he was going to say something like he did to them this last week, where he spoke bluntly, but with charity. And then he warned that sometimes that can be greeted with misunderstanding, and it's the task of the Church to help people understand why the Church believes this, why this is important. And Pope Leo then folded and unfolded the Church's teachings as to why this is important and why they should be applied.
Amen. That's beautiful to see. What, if anything, do you hope will come from this address?
Well, I think Pope Leo is still getting to know a lot of the diplomats. We're anticipating some of his next major international trips to somewhere like Africa or South America. So I think in his interactions on a particular scale with the individual diplomats, he's able to impart the concerns of the Church, but also to offer the Church's vision for the human person, for the life of the family, defending the family. But then on the macro scale, on the global scale, he's talking to people all over the world, not just Catholics, but people of goodwill who are recognizing that there are serious social, cultural, political, and economic problems. And the Church has a vision for all of that. And I think Pope Leo wants to speak to them directly and to their hearts.
Well, Matthew, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great to be with you.
The Supreme Court in British Columbia is set to decide whether Catholic hospitals must provide euthanasia services on site. The case involves a terminally ill woman who sought physician-assisted suicide at a Catholic hospital in Vancouver. Because St. Paul's does not provide assisted suicide, the patient was transferred to another facility. Her family alleged the transfer caused, quote, unnecessary pain and distress. The Conscience Rights case is set to conclude early next month. A new report says Canada is now a world leader in organ transplants from deceased donors, amid a rise in the country's physician-assisted suicide program. The report was published recently in the Washington Examiner. It says a leading HHS official here in the U.S. calls Canada's organ donation program, quote, a strange new horror. The story says demand from the millions of patients worldwide who need an organ transplant greatly outpaces supply. In the United States, an average of 13 people die every day waiting for an organ transplant. Deputy HHS Secretary Jim O'Neill told the Examiner in part, quote, we thought we'd seen all the possible horrors in America, and then Canada had this strange new horror that was really just shocking. For more, we turn to Callum Miller, a pro-life medical doctor and philosopher who follows the global fight for life. Callum, it's great to be with you today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
All right, Callum. So first off, what more do we know about organ harvesting and physician-assisted suicide in Canada? Do the numbers there support the HHS concerns that were voiced?
Yeah, so it's now emerged that there are organs being used from people who have undergone MAID or assisted suicide or euthanasia, which is a concern that many of us have been raising over many years across the world. We know that the same thing has happened in Belgium as well, that you can use organs from people who have undergone this, which of course creates a horrible economic incentive for people to undergo this and to be pressured, because we know how much pressure there is on the organ market generally. There are so few organs, so many people in need of organs, that there's incredible pressure that you can imagine for people to undergo assisted suicide for this reason. It kind of reminds me, a few years ago, there was even a discussion in the UK about creating sort of babies basically to harvest for organs. They called them savior siblings as a way of sort of romanticizing it. But it was actually a very, very dark, sinister idea that you would create human beings just to harvest organs from them. So this is something that's very troubling that's emerging from Canada. But it's not surprising given what we know, how, you know, of what Canada has been doing the last few years.
Yes. And so what, if anything, can be done to limit or even end this practice?
Yeah, I mean, legislation is one of the most obvious things. This is a clear case where, you know, the law doesn't have a place everywhere, but it certainly has a place for protecting the basic rights and dignity of every human being. And that includes protecting them from undergoing this just for, you know, for giving organs. One thing that could be done is say, you know, anyone who undergoes MAID should not be an organ donor. I think that would be a helpful first step. But of course, the best thing is just to stop this entire system of MAID or euthanasia, which is basically killing the old and sick in Canada. I think it's not sort of, it's not an abuse of MAID. It is fundamental to MAID and assisted suicide that our value is only dependent on our utility rather than our inherent dignity as human beings. And so this is not an abuse of MAID or a sort of exploitation of MAID. It is the logical endpoint of MAID, because it says you are here and to be kept alive as long as you are useful. And if you're more useful to us dead, then we'll kill you. That's ultimately what MAID is.
There are so many other pro-life stories, and I hear you've been following one in Andorra, the country between France and Spain, that attempts to legalize abortion, even though one of its highest ranking officials is a bishop. Can you share the latest in that situation?
Yeah, Andorra is a very special place because it's the sort of heads of state are two co-princes. So one of those is the Catholic bishop of Andorra. The other is the French president, Emmanuel Macron. And those obviously have very different value systems. So you can imagine that they might disagree on a few things when it comes to bioethics and abortion and things like that. There's a very strange situation at the moment, and we have to be a bit careful about what we say because I'm sure it's politically sensitive. The government of Andorra is trying to decriminalize abortion. So at the moment, Andorra is one of the only countries in Europe that still protects unborn children and women and families from abortion. But the government is really determined to change that, to remove all the penalties for abortion, to allow it to be done, to have it funded, and so on. And they claim, and the Vatican has been very quiet about this, but the government is claiming that they have been in talks with the Vatican about this decriminalization process, and the government has even been indicating that they are quite close to an agreement. Now, this would be very troubling because any agreement would be a step towards death and towards abortion. And it's very likely that any change from the current law would be something that Catholics and Christians should never agree to. But the government is sort of suggesting that they are reaching this agreement with the Vatican. Now, they originally claimed that they would have an agreement by the end of 2025. And now they've backpedaled a bit and said, we're actually not, not as close as we thought. It's quite possible that they are trying to force the church's hand by pretending there's an agreement and sort of encouraging the church to just go along with it. So the honest answer is we don't really know what is going on. We do know that Vatican officials, very senior officials, including Cardinal Parolin, have met with the Andorran government. We don't know the contents of those discussions. We don't know how much of that was on abortion. But at least the government's narrative is that they are working towards a deal. We hope that's not true, but it's something that certainly we should be aware of, because any deal would likely be a significant move away from the pro-life culture and laws that they currently have.
And this that you mentioned, them trying to use that as a way to kind of force the hand of the Vatican, has this been used in other cases in other countries around the world?
It's a good question. Not to my knowledge, but politicians are politicians. They will often try sneaky tricks. And, you know, we know that one of the Vatican's fundamental diplomatic policies is discretion and being fairly quiet and being very cautious and careful about how they negotiate in these political issues, especially when it comes to the politics of a sovereign nation. And that was obviously a special case because it's got the bishop as the co-prince. So it's a very easy thing to exploit the Vatican's silence and discretion, because you can kind of claim anything about them knowing that they're quite unlikely to give any comment denying it or affirming it. Yeah. So I think that's what the Andorran government has used, and that's partly why we're in a difficult position, because we don't know what the real truth is.
Shifting a little bit back to your own native United Kingdom, we heard the troubling news that a pro-life woman has been arrested for violating the National Buffer Zone law. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so many people will have seen these cases where people have been arrested for praying silently in their heads in the UK. There was one woman who was arrested for holding a sign saying, "Here to talk only if you want." Just simply offering a consensual conversation silently and doing nothing else. She was arrested as well. Most of these arrests have been under local laws from the cities themselves that said no antisocial behavior in these zones. But in the last few months, the UK finally passed a national buffer zone that covers the whole country. And this is the first arrest under that national law. And so it is a significant moment that moves even more towards this kind of authoritarian regime that we've been seeing many people complain about all over the world.
And now, I know you've also been following stories in Costa Rica and the Dominican Republic. What news do you have to share from there?
Yeah, the news generally over the last year in the pro-life space has been relatively good globally. Obviously, there have been difficult things we've spoken about, but around the world, in the last year, no countries have legalized abortion, which is pretty unprecedented. Costa Rica had a situation where they had put out some guidance that reinterpreted the law and sort of encouraged doctors to do abortions. And this, of course, caused significant problems in a country that is generally very Christian and pro-life. Now, the pro-life groups there complained to the government about this. They raised a lot of concerns. And it wasn't clear where it was going to go, because the general sentiment I understand from friends in Central America is that Costa Rica has had one of the more liberal, progressive-leaning governments in the region over the last decade or so. Fortunately, in this case, the pressure worked. The government repealed those guidelines and put out some new guidelines, basically reaffirming the law that said, this is what the law says, you cannot do abortions, children must be protected, you can only intervene if the woman's life is genuinely at stake. And so that was a huge win, because it protected the law and its interpretation in a country that had been trending maybe in a different direction over the last decade. The Dominican Republic has had a big sort of push to change its penal code for many, many years. And it's kind of coming up in the news every few years that there's a new push for it, because it's just been an ongoing drama for years and years and years. And part of the sort of concern about this penal code was the introduction of abortion for certain reasons. And finally, after many, many years, they finally approved the new penal code, and it retains all the protections that the unborn child had before. So abortion is still totally illegal in Dominican Republic. There's obviously medical exceptions if the woman's life is genuinely at risk. But on the whole, the unborn child is still fully protected, and they didn't make those exceptions that there had been a lot of pressure for them to do so. You might have seen a few years ago, the US government actually was alleged to have threatened Dominican lawmakers that if they didn't legalize abortion, they would have their visas removed. This was a big story a few years ago. And so that's the level of pressure that we're talking about, that these legislators of a sovereign nation were being threatened. But they held firm in the end, which is great news for the Dominican Republic.
Well, Callum, thank you so much for being with us today. And it's always a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, ending Christmas with a real gift. We take you back to the Vatican and the traditional way the Holy Father draws a close to the Yuletide season.
Leonardo, io ti battezzo nel nome del Padre e del Figlio e dello Spirito Santo.
Pope Leo XIV baptizes 20 babies in the Sistine Chapel, marking the traditional end to the Christmas season at the Vatican. The Holy Father says the Lord's gift of faith is even more essential than clothing and food. And who would deprive newborns of these things? The baptism was for children of Vatican employees. You're watching EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome back. Finally, tonight, we are 1 week away from the 2026 National March for Life taking place in Washington, D.C. And you can see it all right here on EWTN. Our team of reporters will bring you all the action as we dive into every angle of the pro-life movement with special guests throughout the day. Next week, we will bring you an exclusive interview with Jenny Bradley Lichter, president of the March for Life, as we discuss the pro-life movement in 2026. We will also hear from Patrick Kelly, head of the Knights of Columbus. You won't want to miss it. The theme of this year's rally is Life is a Gift. Here's a sneak peek of what you can expect at this year's National March.
Life is why we march, with joy, with conviction, with purpose. Because life, all life, is a gift. But before the cheering crowds, the homemade signs, and the celebration, it all starts with a heartbeat, a single moment that changes everything. Precious little gift, not wrapped in paper or tied with a ribbon, but full of promise. Every life is a gift, even when it's unexpected. Even when the timing feels off. Even when it's hard. Even when the world says otherwise. We have been marching for over 50 years, and we will still march on. Because the world needs to hear that every single human life is precious. And because our heritage as Americans includes the right to life. We march as heirs of a legacy of courage, hope, and joy, and on behalf of generations yet to come. We march because life is beautiful, unrepeatable, and perfectly unique. Life is worth protecting and worth celebrating. We march to be the voice for the voiceless. All life deserves a chance because every single life is a gift.
Mark your calendars. Our live coverage of the 2026 National March for Life starts at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Friday, January 23rd, and goes until 3 p.m. Eastern. Don't miss this historic march brought to you from the heart of our nation's capital. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. I'm Abigail Galvan. Don't forget, you can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on all social media platforms, X, Facebook, and Instagram. We're there. And if you're interested in more news from our nation and world, go to EWTN.com/pro-life and sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.